On the air and streaming on the web since 1996, this is the Cinematic Sound Radio Network. This is Talking Soundtracks with Jason Jury on the Cinematic Sound Radio Network.
Hello, my name is Jason Drury and welcome once again to Talking Soundtracks on the Cinematic Sound Radio podcast. James Horner, the legendary film composer, has left an indelible mark on the world of film music. His works in the 80s, 90s and 2000s continue to resonate with audiences worldwide. Now, Perseverance Records, in collaboration with Spectral Shimmers Productions and the James Horner Estate, is embarking on a remarkable project, re-recording and releasing renditions of Horner's early, previously unreleased musical compositions. Here now, in a special edition of Talking Soundtracks on the Cinematic Sound Radio podcast, via Zoom, to talk about the project as well as talking about their love of the music of James Horner, is orchestrator Nikephoros Chrysoularis and Perseverance Records founder and producer Robin Esterhammer. Nikki, Robin, welcome to Talking Soundtracks.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Now, how did the project of this James Horner Kickstarter come about?
Robin, do you want to take it or I will? I'm good.
No, you start because you're the one who called me.
I'm going to start, yes. So, yep. I had a conversation last summer about all things James Horner, and The Dresser came up because it's one of my favorite films when it comes to British cinema. I'm a big Albert Finney fan, so the score came up for discussion, and it was mentioned to me that it has never been released as a recording. Ever. So I thought that that might be an interesting idea to talk with Robin, because at the time we were mixing and editing an Alien Suite, a Jerry Goldsmith one that I arranged and reconstructed from the original scores.
And produced,
yes. And we recorded it back here with Fame's Orchestra last summer. It's going to be released sometime next year, but now it's part of our Kickstarter campaign as an add-on reward for backers. Anyway, long story short, The Dresser came up and I called Robin and I said, like, would you be interested in doing a complete re-recording of the score, because probably the original recordings are nowhere to be found. And I mentioned that Robin was very excited about it and we started working on it. And then when we realized that The Dresser alone is a very short score, it's about north of 20 minutes, along with all the arrangements that are in there, like in the Hall of the Mountain King by Grieg and maybe some alternate takes. So it's about north of 20 minutes. And Robin mentioned, I would like to do The Hand as well, because The Hand is a terrific score and it has been a fan favorite for a while now. I mean, like, I used to read about it in the forums and everything. And I said, okay, why not? That's how it came to be, really.
Have you both been long fans of the works of James Horner?
Oh, totally. I mean, James, it was actually Star Trek Wrath of Khan was actually the third CD LP I bought back in 1983 when it was screening in Germany, where I was living at the time. And I actually came out the movie theater whistling the theme. Ever since then, I was like, who's scoring this film? And I was like, oh, James Horner, I gotta buy the LP. So I've always been a really diehard fan of James Horner. When the chance came around to actually record something of James with the blessing of his widow, Sarah, then I was just like, yeah, absolutely, let's go for it.
Nikki?
I have to go with An American Tale.
That's because you're 17 years younger than me.
Probably. Also because I didn't know at the time, because I used to watch it as a youngster. So I didn't know at the time it was James Horner. But when I realized it was James Horner, I said, okay, now we're talking. And then I have to go with Prowl to Legends of the Fall after that, for which I had the opportunity and the privilege to do the world premiere of the concert suite that was performed, premiered there 2 years now ago in Poland. Those three, are at the top. Then the Page Master, Land Before Time, all those scores are favorites of mine. But an American Tale, which is probably my first introduction to James Horner.
You've chosen two interesting scores on James Horner's early career, The Hands and The Dresser. How did you choose those pieces to re-record and why?
As I previously said, The Dresser came to be because it was a favorite film of mine. And I realized after a discussion I had that the score has never been released. The Hand, even though I was familiar with the film, it was a favorite of Robin's. So we discussed it. The decision was made based on the fact that, first, none of the scores have never been released. The Hand was also, as I already said, a bucket list for a lot of fans. And also, both of the scores are beautifully written and composed. And I think that they were indicative of James Horner's early work. And it was an introduction to what was about to follow, stylistically speaking. There is a contrast between the two scores. I mean, like, The Dresser is a very short, intimate score. It has this voice soprano solo, which is like a very turmoiled theme. And then on the other hand, pun intended, we have The Hand, which is a much longer score, a very aggressive one, with a lot of hair-raising moments. And it's a fairly larger orchestra. It's about 65 people playing, with a lot of contemporary techniques. And we thought it would be very interesting and challenging to record it, because The Dresser is very straightforward. It's about 11 to 13 players, and it's a chamber score. Whereas on the other hand, The Hand has like a lot of audio effects on top of the actual score, which is like there is a heavy use of echoplex and reverb. And we have like the blaster beam, which is going to be performed by Craig Huxley, who was originally performing it in the score. And it's a very challenging. And I'm currently reconstructing the score. And I have to say that it's not an easy one performance-wise. So it's going to take a lot of effort from the players. It's going to be a challenge for them. But
it's a challenging score. I think that's what you're trying to say. It's a challenging score.
Yes, I apologize in advance. Because English is not my first language, so...
I understand. You're doing well. You're doing okay.
Thank you. That's the main thing about how we came about to choose those scores. And
yes. Do they have a lot of those James Hornerisms in his music, which really came out throughout his career, indie scores, particularly The Hand?
I'm still in the process of reconstructing everything, so I can't say with certainty all the James Horner mannerisms, so to speak, are in there, but there are a few. I mean, like, we can find the contemporary techniques we can find back in The Rough Hand later on. I think in Wolfen, we can find some of the techniques right there. And when it comes to The Dresser, it's the melody that really comes to mind. I mean, like, he had a knack for melody. I mean, like, take it all the way down to Legends of the Fall, for example, which is like full of melodies. It's fair to say that we can see a lot of James Horner late 80s, early 90s in those scores.
Fascinating. So let's now listen to some mock-ups you kindly gave us to play on this podcast. First, you will hear music from The Hand, and secondly, music from The Dresser.
Thank you.
Now, where are you planning to re-record these scores, and who will be your conductor, and how was he chosen?
We were looking at a lot of orchestras and got a lot of quotes from orchestras, and we were always like, in the background, we always had like the re-recording of King of Kings, and we said, man, that is such a cool recording. And then we both came up with the idea of actually having it done at the City of Prague Philharmonic Orchestra. And we reached over, actually, Nicky Forrest reached out to Magdalena, who is the contractor there, right?
Yes, I have like a personal friend, and we are colleagues, and with Lee Phillips as well. So I have worked with the City of Prague Philharmonic in more than a few occasions, and with when James Fitzpatrick ran the show. I'm very familiar with the players. I'm very familiar with the studio. I'm very familiar with the work. I know they can play anything you can put in on this end.
Yeah.
And they have like, you know, a long resume of complete re-recordings from Tadlo all the way to recent film scores that they are recording each and every day of the year. So it was the obvious choice, for me at least, it was the obvious choice for such a demanding score and for the intimate score the dresser is.
The person that we actually hired to conduct the scores is Matt Dunkley, who is like a big name in the film music industry. He orchestrated now, right? And also conducted Barbie. That was like his last thing that he did. Andor, I think, Star Wars, Top Gun, Maverick. And he's just a huge name. And he was actually very excited about the project. So that is something that I was really happy to find out, because in the few emails we exchanged, we're like always talking about how cool that was and what he can bring to the project. And it was just a great chance to talk to somebody who is like that high up in the clout of film scoring to have the same kind of passion for it as we do. And I think that's what made me want to hire Matt. And I think we made a good choice.
A fun fact, if I may add here, is that we worked together with Matt on and the City of Prague Philharmonic back in 2018, I think. And that's how we first met professionally. He was the Clint Mansell's orchestrator at the time, and we did the first concert, Clint Mansell's symphonic concert. So he arranged all of the favorite or all of the famous Clint Mansell scores, and I had the chance to work together on this. And that's how this whole team came to be, in terms of we had the chance to work together. We had the chance to work with the City of Prague Philharmonic at Smetsky Studio as well at rehearsal. So, you know, it's like, it's a full circle.
Sounds a very good and very interesting team. I'm looking forward to hearing this come to fruition. Now, how much has Sarah Horner and the James Horner estate been involved in this project?
When we decided to record those scores and I went to Robin with the idea, I introduced him to Kim of Spectral Shimmer Productions, which is familiar and very close to the Horner estate. And because we worked together on the James Horner tribute in Poland, for which I did the Legends of the Fall suite, it was only natural that I want him to bring him into the project because of his connection with the estate and his sensitivity towards and connection with the not only with the Horner estate, but with the music itself. He has a personal connection to the music. And I said, like, it would be a great idea to bring him into this project. And it would be also the first project that Spectral Shimmer Productions, his company, would be involved with. He was the one that made the introduction between Perseverance Records and Sarah Horner. When the introductions were made, Kim was kind enough through Sarah to give us access to the material, to the original scores. And from then on, we just took over in terms of reconstructing and do everything else.
I know that pretty much narrows it down to how we came about to work with the James Horner estate. And then actually Sarah recorded a brief video of like a minute and a half that you can see on the Kickstarter site endorsing the project, and really appreciative of her doing so. We'll hope it's going to be many, many more projects that we're going to do with them.
I hope so too. How important do you feel was James Horner's general contribution to film music?
It was absolutely huge. I mean, what he did from melody is amazing. There's that one score that I can think of, even and a sort of like an atonal score like Red Heat or Commando. He had a knack to write in melodies that you can still whistle after you've left the theater. It was almost like it was a revolution that he started that brought back the melody to the film scores, because in the 70s, it was a lot of like atonal stuff, contemporary music. Those kind of take a little bit of time to get used to. But the music, I mean, Lessons of a Fall or Braveheart or Cocoon, I mean, all those have amazing melodies. That's just what I think was really one of his biggest contributions.
Nicky?
I agree with everything that Robin said. I mean, like James Cronenberg really skyrocketed after the Titanic success. I think that up until then, which was 1997 or something?
Eight.
1998. There was a broad range of style in terms of the way he approached composition. I mean, like Legends of the Fall, yes. We have An American Tale, as I said. We have like The Hand, The Dresser, Wrath of Khan, Aliens, 48 Hours. I mean, like there was a broad range of styles that he brought onto the table. So I think that he was instrumental in, as Robin said, bringing back melody, but also experiment a lot with his scores. And I also, in some cases, I like the simplistic approach. And by simplistic, I don't mean technically, but it sounds simpler. Yet, sometimes it's very complex when you see the score. His contribution is massive. He left us way too early. He had so much to give to the film.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with that. Horner, different phases in his style. He used to be more action-oriented with the Star Trek 2. When it came towards, like, in the 90s, like, Legends of the Fall, Braveheart, it's very melodic, very scoring, like, the emotions of the film more than anything. And I thought after Titanic, it was kind of a bit more action-oriented. I think one of my favourite scores there is The Perfect Storm. Is it absolutely brilliantly orchestrated and sounds amazing because it was recorded at Todeo. And it was that sort of feeling that Horner, towards the end of his life, it was getting back to those sort of action-y sort of feels to his music. It was getting very exciting, very interesting. And it was such a shame, as you said, in 2015, he left us way too soon. I think he had a lot more to offer. It was such a shame he left us in such a sad way.
He was at a certain age that we say, not peak, but he was like, matured stylistically, and he was able to give a lot more to film music. It's like late Jerry Goldsmith. I mean, like, if you remember, like, in his 60s and early 70s when he left us, he gave us like scores like LA Confidential and The Hollow Man and everything like that, which was fantastic scores.
And those are all scores that I might want to add that not only work in the film, they also work great on an album. Because a lot of people always complain about, oh, you know, I can't listen to this and it's just too, I don't know what the score is about. But they forget that the music was written to be in context with the film and not for release on an album. But James Horner and Hans Zimmer is another one, Jerry Goldsmith, they actually knew how to program an album and how to, I don't know if they composed for it with a soundtrack release in mind. I kind of doubt that, but they would always have a really good soundtrack album coming out, and you don't need every single note for it. You know, you can just pick the, I mean, back in LP days when you only had like 44 minutes for an LP, they were always able to pick like cream of the crop of those 44 minutes and put those in an album. And that is just an amazing feat they achieved.
I think the reason behind that, if I may add, is that they knew how to compose. They had structure in their approach, and their music could be twofold, can serve two purposes. One was the film it was written for, and the other one, there was music that could stand on itself, and it be standalone music, and it makes sense to the listener. So that shows enormous amount of knowledge of the craft and in music composition, because it's not an easy task. It's like Joe Williams, who also could do this, and John Barry and Henry Mancini. Yeah. So it's not an easy task to do and achieve.
Just going back to the hand, James Horner had a wonderful knack of having these very long cues, like 7 or 8 minute cues in one take. Is there anything like that in the hand?
No.
You got lucky there then.
Well, yes. I don't know though, because we haven't decided, and because I'm still reconstructing, and it's a lot of music to be put down on paper. And I don't know if we're going to decide in the end to have certain cues compiled together. Like, for example, you have in other scores, you got one or two compiled together and done like a 5 or 6 minute cue in the end. Because there are a lot of 26 seconds cues, because it's like a sting here and there. I think that the longest one is about 3 minutes, 50 seconds so far, longest cue, which is not that long.
I remember a story that Nick Redman told me about James Horner when he attended a recording session of Kakuda Return, and Tommy DeDisco was the guitarist, and they recorded the NQ. His piece was at the very end of the queue. He was petrified. If he got it wrong, he would have to go back to the very beginning again. It was like a 10-minute queue, and so he was absolutely petrified. If he got it wrong, they'd have to go back again and start from the very beginning. And so I know Horner, it was a unique style, Horner, because he loved these very long cues. That turned into symphony movements. Sound wonderful. So, yeah, that wonderful gift of flowing music. And I do remember people saying that he didn't use click a lot. He just used the baton and the mood. He was a very old-fashioned composer in that respect. He was very old at controlling music himself, using his hands and not use a lot of click. So he was a very, very gifted composer.
No, Alan Silvestri has the same thing. He doesn't even use a baton when he's conducting.
There is a sequence in the film towards the end. It's the garage scene that has like three parts in the score. So we might as well put them together as a single cue, just not to break the trend of long cues that he preferred to do. And like, there are three parts in the guard scene, so we may as well.
Sure.
Now, once these wonderful recordings are complete, when will be the timeline for their release?
We are looking to record this one in last 2 weeks in June, I believe. And then it has to be edited, mixed, mastered. So probably we're looking at like September, something like that, around September. The Kickstarter campaign is going to end on May 6th, I believe. So that's roughly the timeline we're looking at. It's probably around September, something like that.
Now, I have looked at the FSM thread, and there's some concerns of Horner fans that the project may be in trouble over the high amount still to be raised on the Kickstarter campaign. Can you, here and now, put all the rumours that these fans are concerned about to rest concerning the future of the project?
I mean, there's definitely a future for the project. The thing that we've been discussing for a while now, Nikki Follers and I, we absolutely believe in the project. It's no doubt. It's going to happen. The only thing that was kind of a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Nikiforos, but the lot of voices on Film Score Monthly were always mentioning their concern that because it was such an expensive project, it wouldn't get the funding. And the response we had, and we also still have in our heads, is like, you know, don't worry about the financing. Give as much as you can. And it's not really it's not going to get not funded because it's such a high project. It's because people are afraid that they're going to lose their money, which is absolutely not true. I mean, they're not going to lose their money just because it's a big and an expensive project. They will only get charged when project actually comes to fruition. So believe the project, just accept it, that it's going to happen, and give as much as you can. And that's all there is to say to it. Ligi Force, do you have something else to say?
Well, from my point of view, because I'm the music person of the project and the producer, yes, but mostly I'm the music person behind this. I have to say that I can see why the psychological factor kicked in terms of the six figure, but we have to let everyone, including ourselves, when we were discussing about it, all the backers or the potential backers or whoever already backed this project so far, and we thank you for your support. They have to realize that there is no comparison between this project and earlier projects from other labels or whoever did any similar one. Because what we're trying to do here is to record two complete scores, which have never been released. It's not a re-recording of something that it's already exists out there on an album or somewhere. It's something that the original recordings are either not available or they will never see the light of day. I'm not the person to talk about it, but I know that with this recording, we will get the chance, every James Horner fan and every film music fan for that matter, to have the chance to listen to the recordings at a pristine quality performed by one of the best orchestras out there. And with the addition of guest artists like Matt Dudley on the podium, Craig Huxley and his blaster beam, as he calls it, Gloria Chang on the piano, probably one or two that are yet to be confirmed. And they have to realize that with the addition of the concert works that we haven't really touched upon, the project was added a $40,000 cost just for the preparation and the recording sessions of the seven concert works alone. There was an added $40,000 cost to the overall amount, which ended up being almost $109,000. So
128,900.
Yeah, it's like a 140-minute 2-CD album, and it's going to be a contrast between the film scores, which in themselves they are different between them, and it's an early example of what Horner was about to give to the film music world, and direct contrast with his concert works, which were like student works in the majority of them. I am able to talk about this because I have the scores and I've already reconstructed a few of them. They are nothing like you expect. They're very contemporary, very dissonant, very no melodic lines whatsoever. I mean, like, whenever you say, when James Horner comes to mind, this kind of music, the concert works that we're about to record, it's nothing you'd expect. And that was the idea behind the recording and include them all together in one go to the concert.
As juxtaposition. Yeah. As juxtaposition to the concerts, to the film scores. Yeah.
And I have to add here that the idea behind the concert works was from the guys at Spectral Simmer production. The initial idea, which we discussed with Robin, was to have one concert work or two per album. So we'll have like the dresser, the hand, and as an add bonus, we will add one or two of the concert works. But in the end, we decided that, you know what? Why don't we have like double CD album with film scores on one side and then the concert works on the other, so the fans have the opportunity to listen to the difference between the recorder of the early 70s as a student and then the Horner of the early 80s as the film composer. We have to mention here that the concert works, besides, I think, except from four, if I'm not wrong, have never seen the light of day. There are published works. So it's an opportunity.
So these are works that people probably never heard of before.
They've never heard of them. They've never heard of them.
Yes.
It's something that was just sitting there in the archives. And when we had a chance to re-record them, we were like, this is a really good idea. This is, you know, this is something that we can make sure that people will listen to, that this is something that was kind of like the seedling for James's further career, further down the line. And the juxtaposition, I like that word, the juxtaposition between the film scores and the concert works is what makes the whole album flow, because they're just indicative of how he would approach future film scoring.
And to circle back to the original question, which was like the Kickstarter concerns from the fans. I mean, like, as I said at the beginning, there's no point of comparing because there are two different things that we're trying to do here. And previous Kickstarter campaigns were basically focused on only film scores. And most of the fun they were discussing about was like for the recording session themselves. What Perseverance is covering with this Kickstarter campaign is the entire project, from recording sessions to music prep, reconstruction, guest artists, liner notes, artwork, traveling, and the Kickstarter fees. Everything, the 100% is covered through this Kickstarter campaign. We obviously know it's a high amount, but it's been almost 40 days now that the campaign is running. Yeah. And we would like to ask the fans, instead of expressing concerns or voicing concerns, if that's a better choice of words, to actually get behind the project and support it in the best way, I mean, like to the best of their ability, because that's the only way it will happen. Consider this. If it wasn't, I mean, like the City of Prague Philharmonic, the Ford Upstate, all those magnificent artists like Mike Dunkley, Gloria Chang, Craig Huxley, nobody would have said yes if they didn't know that we're how serious we are about this project. Those are like people and artists at the top of the game and the best of the best, really. So why in any way risk their name, their reputation, to be involved in a project that they don't believe in? I don't see the point. I mean, like, we've been working nonstop for the past 4 months. We're obviously reaching out to a lot of companies, colleagues, James Horner colleagues, our very own collaborators and clientele and whoever we know in order to support this. But it's a time-consuming process. We did issue a response last night, if I'm not wrong, Robin, about this. And we're pretty much covering what we're just now saying. And we're hoping that through this podcast, we'll reach out to a wider audience and they will finally realize that we mean business. And we're very much into this, not for the profit, because let's face it, nobody's getting rich from projects like this. Otherwise, we would have funded ourselves. So
nobody gets rich off film music.
Yeah, it's for the passion. Well, the composers are, but we're not the composers. I mean, like James Horner obviously used to do very well and deservedly so. But what we're doing this for the passion of this, of film music. I'm doing it because it's both my work and it's both I'd like enough to do to turn my passion into work, into job. And without people like us, these scores would have never seen the light of day. So the only thing we ask is to support this. We have 3 weeks left. It's a long way to go because we are, I think, at 90% maybe. Well,
9%.
So it's a long way to cover. But I know for sure that if fans want to support it, it will happen. So all we ask is to support it and you will not regret it. That's my point of view. Like it's, that's it.
Well, it definitely from that, we can clearly see you're both passionate about this project. So I want to make it work. And Eric and myself at Cinematic Sound Radio are right behind you guys. And we're just really looking forward to what comes out of it. And we will promote this project to the hilt. And hopefully, we'll be at the end of it, we'll hear some wonderful music to play on our show as well at the end of the day, and we will promote that too once it comes out. Nikolaos Christelios and Robin Esterhammer, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you for joining us today and talking soundtracks, and good luck on this Kickstarter campaign, and hopefully it will come to fruition, and we wish you every success imaginable.
Thank you so very much for the invitation, and we hope to see you talk to you again with the actual release of the album.
Thank you very much, Jason. Also, give our thanks for Eric.
I do hope you've enjoyed my interview with orchestrator Nikolaos Christelios and Perseverance Records founder and producer Robin Esterhammer. I must also mention here that the Talking Soundtracks theme was composed by David Cosina. I leave you with another mock-up kindly given to us by Nikki as a Cinematic Sound Radio exclusive for what is intended to be recorded at the end of June by the City of Prague Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Matt Dunkley. This is a clip from a piece composed by James Horner in 1974 entitled Pettimenti. My sincere thanks again to Nikki and Robin for joining us today in this special edition of Talking Soundtracks on the Cinematic Sound Radio podcast. And to meet again, for me, Jason Drury, is take care and happy listening.
Thank you for tuning in to the Cinematic Sound Radio Network. I want to thank Tim Burden for providing his voice for all the bumpers and stingers you hear throughout the program, and David Cosina for providing Cinematic Sound Radio's theme music. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please email us at cinematicsound@yahoo.com. You can find us on social media at SinSound Radio on Twitter and Cinematic Sound on Facebook. And if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please take a moment right now to rate the show and write a brief review. Reviews help introduce potential listeners to the show. And while you're at it, head over to TeePublic to get a Cinematic Sound Radio t-shirt. And don't forget to check out Cinematic Sound Radio at cinematicsound.net.